WMRA News. I'm Bob Levicky. Algal blooms continue to spread in the North Fork Shenandoah River. Meanwhile, authorities discover hydrocarbons in the water supply in eastern Orange County. And the Wildlife Center in Waynesboro admits its 100,000th patient. This is the WMRA Daily for Friday, August 23rd. The North Fork Shenandoah River is in the middle of excessive algal blooms, restricting fishing and swimming. The Daily News Record reports that the Virginia Department of Health's algal mat alert spans about 11 miles of the river from Deer Rapids to the town of Strasburg. Their investigation revealed widespread and unavoidable algal mats potentially producing toxins. The VDH says that drinking water has so far not been affected. Scientists say the algal blooms are caused by higher water temperatures from hot weather, low water levels, and pollutants from lawns, parking lots, and farms. An indefinite do-not-use-water order is still in place for parts of Orange County. Megan Moore with VPM News has this update.
Water supplied by the Wilderness Water Treatment Plant has been found to be contaminated with hydrocarbons, according to reporting from CBS 19 and at the Madison County Eagle. Hydrocarbons are normally found in natural gas, crude oil, and even coal. A Virginia Department of Health spokesperson said the preliminary screening indicated the presence of, quote, volatile organics, and that more detailed results are expected by Monday. RSA has strongly urged affected Locust Grove residents, schools, and businesses to avoid all contact with tap water and to instead use bottled water for all food and beverage preparation, laundry, bathing, and sink use. A local state of emergency has been declared, and all Orange County public schools will be closed Friday. Locust Grove Primary School and the Hornet Sports Center at OC High School will be open from 8:30 a.m. to 3 p.m. on Friday for residents to fill water bottles or access showers.
Megan Moore reporting. A boil water notice will be in effect for some residents in Pendleton County. WHSV reports that Pendleton County PSD water customers who are north of Franklin along U.S. 220 will be without water while crews repair a leak. Once the repairs are complete, residents are under a boil water notice until advised otherwise. The Wildlife Center of Virginia recently admitted its 100,000th patient, a wild animal whose predicament underscores the impact that humans have on the creatures around us, WMRA's Randy Behage reports.
The Wildlife Center in Waynesboro took in a northern ringneck snake on Wednesday, its 100,000th patient in 42 years of operation. It was found stuck on a glue trap with two other deceased snakes. The species is a small, dare I say cute, snake described as secretive by several herpetological resources.
They found that, you know, it was very thin, very dehydrated, and fairly weak, so it had likely been on that glue trap for some time.
Connor Gillespie, director of outreach, explained that the veterinarian team used mineral oil to gently release the snake from the adhesive and cleaned it with Dawn dish soap. They gave it fluids and heat support, but its condition continued to decline, and the vets decided to euthanize the reptile. It's a prime example of why the center does not advise using glue traps to address a rodent or insect problem.
Anything can be trapped on them. We see snakes, we see frogs, we see chipmunks, we see birds, even owls that are stuck on these traps. And it's also very inhumane. They don't perish right away. It's usually a very lengthy process.
But the milestone is still a testament to the collaborations that keep the center running.
We never would have reached patient 100,000 alone. It took concerned citizens that are finding these animals, rescuers that are containing them and bringing them to us, those transporters, as well as, you know, the financial supporters of the center that are helping us give them the best medication, treatment, and care possible.
The day's intakes didn't stop there, though. This patient was followed by a great horned owl, a pied-billed grebe, and other animals in need. For WMRA News, I'm Randy Behage.
You can see a picture of the snake at WMRA.org or on the app. Virginia's universities are recognized among the best in the nation, but their expansion has often displaced adjacent communities. Now, a legislative committee is looking into what impact state universities had on their neighboring black communities. Virginia Public Radio's Brad Kuttner has more from the committee's first meeting.
The commission to study the history of the uprooting of black communities by public institutions of higher education was authorized under the 2024 state budget agreement. Armed with about $60,000 over the next 2 years, and led by Richmond delegate Dolores McQuinn, the group aims to understand what role colleges like Christopher Newport University and others played in harming Black communities as they expanded their physical footprint during the last century and today. Here's McQuinn.
Across this nation, this has happened. And I'm hoping that as Virginians and General Assembly, that we could say, you know what, we're ready to take on the challenges. We are ready to stand in the face of this and address it.
During the committee's first meeting this week, Brandi Kellum, a reporter with the Virginia Center for Investigative Journalism at WHRO, presented findings from her award-winning coverage of the issue. Kellum found Christopher Newport University used local authority, university influence, and even the Virginia Attorney General's office to take land from established Black neighborhoods.
This is a collective, systemic dismantling of a community by several parties in power across the state of Virginia.
A representative from Christopher Newport was not at the meeting, but in a statement sent to Radio IQ, a spokesperson for the university said they were looking forward to working with the commission on its important initiative. McQuinn, meanwhile, said she hopes CNU and other Virginia universities will work with them to develop a way to, quote, bring some level of wholeness to Black families that were impacted. In Richmond, I'm Brad Kuttner.
And finally today, the political conventions are over, and the major party field is set for November's election. Jeff Shapiro, political columnist at the Richmond Times-Dispatch, and Virginia Public Radio's Michael Pope, join us to recap some of the historical moments when Virginia was in the convention spotlight.
The Democratic National Convention is now one for the history books. And, you know, Virginia has often played an important role in Democratic conventions over the years. One of the most interesting is the 1932 Democratic Convention in Chicago, where former Virginia Governor Harry Byrd was a candidate for president. Virginia Senator Carter Glass gave a nomination speech. Harry Byrd then explained why he wanted to be president. The whole pitch was about fiscal austerity and fiscal responsibility. Then the Richmond Light Infantry Blues Band struck up a song. They released White Carrier Pigeons. Harry Byrd did not become president, of course. But in that 1932 convention, Democrats nominated Franklin Roosevelt, who did become president. And, you know, Harry Byrd and Franklin Roosevelt actually worked together for about 100 days. But Jeff Shapiro, that's a relationship that ended up kind of sour, right?
Oh, yes. That convention was pretty much the beginning of the end for that relationship between HFB Sr. and FDR. Harry Byrd, very disturbed over Roosevelt's, shall we say, inflation of the government and even greater inflation of deficits with his ambitious program to extract the nation from the Great Depression.
The 1952 Democratic Convention also is one worth looking at because the Virginia delegation almost was not seated. Jeff Shapiro, what was going on there?
That convention also in Chicago is the one that just closed was at issue in 1952. The loyalty oath. Democrats from Virginia were not exactly enamored of their choices at the national level that year, Adlai Stevenson, and refused to pledge to support the nominee for the presidency. There was a great foot race, as it was called, between the governor at the time, John Battle, and a former governor, Bill Tuck, who would soon be elected to Congress, both of whom wanted to make impassioned speeches arguing opposing views over this issue. Battle got there first in a very conciliatory speech, won over the convention, which then voted narrowly to seat the Virginia delegation.
Another interesting Democratic convention worth looking at is 1984, when Virginia Governor Chuck Robb was doing his best to drag the party toward the middle. Was he successful?
Well, not that year. And of course, Robb, as one of the founders of the Democratic Leadership Council, urged, as they were later called, those San Francisco Democrats. This was a term of opprobrium applied by the Republicans to moderate their stance. Of course, they would not. 84, the Democrats would lose on a titanic scale for the presidency.
And then, of course, we've got to include 2016 in Philadelphia, where Tim Kaine was the VP nominee. Jeff Shapiro, you were there in Philadelphia. What was it like?
Kane, of course, is installed. He gives this robust acceptance speech in which he gave a very poor imitation of Donald Trump. But what was really central to Kane's remarks was his appeal to never Trump or Trump Republicans. Among them, his father-in-law, former Governor Linwood Houlton, the first Republican elected governor of Virginia in the 20th century. Houlton was in the arena in Philadelphia that night.
All right. That's all the time that we've got for this week. My name is Michael Pope, and we've been joined by Jeff Shapiro of the Richmond Times-Dispatch. Talk to you next week.
Roger that.
For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoy your Friday.